listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom, and this is the Save the Marriage podcast, the podcast designed to help you regardless of what's going on in your marriage right now. You might be on the edge of a crisis. You might be in the midst of a crisis. You may be just trying to keep away from a crisis at all, and I'm here to help you with that process. Here's why. There are some root pieces of marriage that we misunderstand that get us into trouble, and there are some root causes of marital issues. When a couple's having a problem, the roots of it are the same and they stretch all the way back to the beginning of a crisis. And if you want to head off a crisis in the first place, then you need to understand these dynamics. And this is no less true today because a lot of times people say, well, what if there's an addiction in our marriage? What if one of us is addicted to something? Does that change your process? And the answer to that is yes. And no, there are some pieces that are important to understand, and then there are some pieces that are exactly the same, regardless of whether there is an addiction. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about those two pieces separately before we try to pull them together into what you do about this. So let's first talk about the relational issues. Marriages get into trouble because there is some relational issue, and there can be lots of reasons why that relational issue is there. Addiction may be a piece of the puzzle, but it's not the puzzle. Many times, with very rare exceptions, there is a disconnect that is happening in the couple. In fact, in every case, there's a disconnect. The question is whether there is kind of a benign disconnect or whether something else is going on. For instance, there can be disconnect because somebody has some psychopathology, some sociopathology in particular. Somebody may just not have the relational capacity. Now, a lot of times when I say that, people say, oh, that's probably my spouse. My spouse doesn't have relational capacity because it's so cold and they're so distant. And in reality, sociopaths are a very small portion of our population. A lot of times we confuse sociopaths with narcissists and narcissism. And even in that, there is a difference between somebody who is a clinical narcissist, somebody who has a narcissistic personality disorder, and the fact that we all carry some level of narcissism in our life, that we all naturally are self-reflective and self-worried. You know, we worry about what we're getting. That narcissism of being in love with our image is where that comes from. So all those dynamics are floating around, but there's the relational element, which is true, that disconnection. You see, we humans are created to be in relationship. It's in our DNA. And in fact, that relational piece is best served, I believe, with two people, a couple. Because anytime you add another element into there, it begins to add other dynamics into that. Whenever there is a third party of some sort, it adds a triangle into the dyad. And that at that point, it begins to have some difficulty. So let me just speak about that for a minute, because in a lot of theories, it says that the triad, the triangle, is the first stable relationship. And so we often use the analogy of a stool. If you have a two-legged stool, it's pretty unstable, right? It's hard to balance. If you have a three-legged stool, suddenly there's a lot more balance to it. So there's stability in it, but the stability is because you can move energy into somewhere else. If you're leaning on one of those stools, you know, the reason it's more stable is because there's something that catches you no matter where you move. But the stability that's inherent in that setup also brings in other dynamics like indirectness. So briefly, a triangle is when there is something, a third issue, a third party that is getting energy that ought to go between two people. I'll give you a quick example of a triangle. Let's say that you are on the outs with a friend. You and that friend have gotten into an argument. You don't know how to settle it. You're frustrated. You're hurt by it. And instead of talking to that person and solving it and having to face all the energy that would be in that exchange, you go talk to another friend about that friend. You go talk to that other friend to get that person on your side and to agree with you on how grievous that situation is, how bad that other person was, right? We're trying to get them to side with. So we're talking about how bad that other person was and how they acted. That's what we're doing in triangles. We're moving energy away from where it ought to be directed to a third place. And that's the problem with the triangle. It may be more stable in terms of emotional content, but it's less stable in terms of directness in the relationship. So how does that play out in a marriage? Let's say that you and your spouse are having a disagreement, an argument, some breakdown in the connection between you, and you go find some third party. It might be a friend to talk to. It might be that you even find somebody to have a relationship with. Infidelity, right? But it may be something, not someone. For instance, instead of dealing with the difficulties, someone in the relationship goes and gets drunk or gets stoned or gets high or gets distracted by a process like gambling or something like that. Now they have moved the relational issues into a substance. Many times people have told me that they were drowning their sorrows of their relationship in some substance or trying to disappear into, you know, their gambling or some other distraction. Sometimes we get addicted to even exercise or something like that as a distraction. It keeps us away from those pieces. And that's when we begin to cross over into what happens when there is addiction in the relationship. So now let's talk a little bit about the addiction issues. Now, I believe that all of us humans have a propensity toward addiction. In fact, most of us have addictions that we don't identify as such. Most of us have addictions to things like sugar or caffeine or something like that. And that's kind of embedded in our DNA. If you want to figure out whether that's the case or not, completely give up sugar or completely give up caffeinated drinks to see what happens to your body and how your mind tries to get you to eat that sugar or get that caffeine in. That's an addictive process. When people find themselves craving something, that's the nature of addiction. We don't identify it that way very easily because we like to think of the addictions as bigger things, you know, alcohol or some other substance that leads to this dependency, the bodily dependency. And so there are actually two levels to addiction. There is the physical dependency and there is the psychological dependency. Both of those are important to think about. There are substances that once they get into our body adapts to those substances. And when it adapts to the substances, it actually needs the substance there in order to feel normal. Not to feel good, but to feel normal. And that's kind of the trick of any substance. You know, when we first try something, we may not be addicted, and it may make us feel good. You go to a party, you're kind of uptight. You know, it might have happened years past, and you're kind of anxious and not sure how to talk to people. And so you grab an alcoholic drink, and it makes it a little easier to talk to people. It makes you less self-conscious. And so you walk away feeling like you are much more lively or you are much more sedate at that particular event. And so then it creates a feedback loop where the next time you're more likely to want to get into that state. And so you go back to the same thing that got you there. But then the body begins to adapt. And that's what our body does. Put in some foreign substance, and the body tries to make that okay, make it normal. And so our body begins to adapt to those substances, and pretty soon the body needs that substance there just to get to normal. It takes a while for many people for alcohol, less time for some of the more addictive substances, but over time the body is not getting, it's not that it's going to a higher state, it's going to a base state because it starts at a lower state. And so many times people find that they're not getting the same effect from some substance. And so what do you do when you don't get the same effect? You add more substance to it. And so you're chasing after the feeling you initially had, and it gets harder and harder to find. And as that happens, the body gets more and more dependent upon that substance. And then there's the psychological piece, where that substance ends up being a way of kind of medicating away feelings. We learn to cope that way. And this is one of the things that happens when teenagers start using substances. They stop learning coping skills, and they revert to the coping with a substance. So they don't learn the skills along the way that help them face life. And then we hit adulthood, and we may not have the skills necessary to face the difficult times in life because we've relied on the effect of that substance. It's no less true with people who become addicted to processes. Now, processes, things are like gambling and relationships and sex, where there's not actually any substance going into the body. And then there are those that kind of are on the cusp, for instance, foods. You see, we don't have to drink alcohol, we don't have to smoke, we don't have to take any drugs. That's not a necessary part of survival, but you do have to eat in order to survive. And so food can be an addictive process, many times for psychological reasons. If you've ever been in a down mood and began to go find your comfort foods, you know that that's a psychological process, but it's also a physical piece. And then there are those that are purely psychological crutches. You know, people who gamble to get that shot of adrenaline, or people who are into sexual addictions to get that shot of adrenaline because that makes them feel better. They've become addicted to how their body responds to that activity. Over time, though, when we are stressed, we end up finding that those substances or processes are ways for us to cope, which leads to addiction. Now, let's put those two pieces together, the relational piece and the addictive piece. It's pretty much a rule of thumb that when addictions are up, connection is down. And the risk is when connection is down, addictions go up because they are coping strategies. People who are having struggles in a relationship may resort to those substances. But the more they resort to the substances, the less energy they have to devote to the relationship. So one kind of creates the other, which creates a feedback loop. And so as addictions deepen, the relational issues also deepen. As addictions deepen, the connection begins to wane more and more, putting the relationship at more and more risk. So how can you save, or let's start with the question, can you save a marriage when there's addiction? And the question is, yes, you can, but you cannot fully address the relational until the addictive side of things is at least identified and accepted. If somebody is getting more and more addicted to something, but they're unwilling to look at it, it's very hard to address the relational issues because the relationship is always going to be the blame for the addiction, and they're not willing to give up the addiction. That's true for all of us. We all protect our addictions. Now, notice I said that the addiction has to be identified and accepted. I didn't say it had to be resolved. Once somebody can say, yes, I've got a problem here, you can work through the relational pieces while that person is working through the addictive pieces, while they work on their own recovery from that substance or that process. The two pieces can go hand in hand. You don't have to be entirely into recovery from addiction to deal with the relational pieces, but they at least have to be identified and accepted by the person who's addicted. Until that happens, all you can do is kind of set the foundation, the framework for that work. So here's why that is the issue. There is a rule about when somebody's addicted to something. The number one rule of somebody who is addicted is it's not about the addiction. If you notice in families where there is an addiction, the last thing anybody wants to identify is that the addiction is the problem. We protect our addictions because we want to hold on to our addictions, because when we don't give into that addiction, we feel really bad. It's what makes us physically feel very bad. And so part of what's going on is people are dealing with that number one rule. it's not the addiction. It's not the alcohol. It's not the marijuana. It's not the drugs. It's not the gambling. It's not the sex or infidelity. It's not all these other things that are indicators of addiction. Now, let me say, not all infidelity is about addiction, but those who are addicted to relationships or sex fall into that category of the process. And so it's easiest to say it's not about this. In fact, in many marriages, people want to always point to these things and say, it's not about that. It's not that, right? It's our relationship. And they're unwilling to face the fact that that, whatever that is, has played a part in the disconnection. They don't want to face that because then they have to look at their own behavior and how they're going to deal with that behavior, either to change it or to at least accept they're not going to change it. So the number one rule of addiction is it's not about the addiction. It's really a misdirection. You know, it's kind of like when something's going on, you say, oh, there's nothing to see over here. Here, look over here, right? Don't look over here. There's nothing going on, nothing to see. Walk on, move on, look the other way. It's the old magic trick, right? The magician is doing things on the sly by getting you to look somewhere else. And the addiction is trying to get you to not notice what's going on with the addiction by looking at something else. And so it's very easy to say, oh, this is really about you. You're creating problems in our relationship. It's not about what I'm doing over here. It's about you and your issues. You're controlling. You're always, you know, blaming me and lots of other kind of statements that are to refuse to look at the addictive side. So that's why it's so important to at least be able to identify and accept that the addiction process is there. So what do you do? Let's say it's your addiction. The first thing you do is you get help if it's your addiction. If you're aware after kind of thinking through this that you're drinking in addictive ways. And by the way, the definition of abusive drinking, we talk more about abusive drinking now than alcoholism, but abusive drinking is defined as when you are drinking specifically for the effect, which is most of the time when people are drinking. There are lots of people who like a good whatever with some specific food and they like the taste. But many people, when they go to a party, are grabbing a drink for the effect. If we're drinking for effect, if people are drinking or using a substance for the effect, by that nature, unless it's been prescribed, and even then there's a danger, it is an addictive process. And so if it's your addiction, to be able to identify that that is the case is an important beginning point, and then you get help. I believe that a great place to start is the 12-step program. Now, the 12-step program is not for everyone. 12-step programs, if you're not familiar, are like AA, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, or Narcanon, or Sex Addicts Anonymous, or Gamblers Anonymous, or some of these other groups that are based on following the 12-step process of recovery that began with Alcoholics Anonymous. Why do I believe that's the best place to start? Well, because it's self-help. You can do that initially on your own. It's free, and it's readily available for anyone. I will tell you that addictions, people with addictions, don't always fit with the 12-step process. But that doesn't mean it's not an addiction. It just simply meant that that was not the way for somebody specifically to handle their addiction. There are lots of other ways, treatment programs and therapists and lots of other ways of getting help. But if it is your addiction, then you want to begin to get help. And the great place to start with that is a 12-step program. If you're drinking too much, Alcoholics Anonymous. If you find yourself using a harder drug, harder substance of some sort, Narcotics Anonymous. You can find other different ones. If you find yourself gambling too much, there is a Gamblers Anonymous. If it's a sex addiction or a relationship addiction, Sex Addicts Anonymous is a great place to start the process to see if that is the level that works. It's worked for many, many people, and it may be exactly what you need. If not, you know, not necessarily that there's no addiction, but that you might need a different process for yourself. But the important part is getting help. The first step in the 12-step process is to recognize and accept that you're not having control over what's going on. It's got you. You don't have it. And that's the beginning point that you can begin working on other things. But what if it's your spouse's addiction? Well, As you probably have surmised, if you've been listening much to my podcast, you're not going to be able to control your spouse's behavior. You can't get your spouse into counseling or therapy or a 12-step program until they're ready to do that. But you can get help for yourself. This is why I like Al-Anon. Al-Anon is the spousal side, the family side of AA. Alcoholics Anonymous has the secondary group that's associated that's for spouses and family members so they can understand how to keep the disease of addiction from affecting them and for them to not be adding more problems to the process of recovery. It's a great place to learn about yourself and your interactions with somebody who's addicted. So notice what I said about a spouse. The spouse's job is not to force a spouse into recovery. If your spouse becomes compromised medically, there are ways to kind of force that process along with the medical necessity. But generally, for people at a stage where you're recognizing that the addiction is in the way of a marriage recovery, you want to work on your reactions to the process, to the addiction process. So if it's your spouse, make sure you get help. Now, once that the whole addiction piece has been addressed, everything else in my program still fits. So if you find yourself dealing with the addiction, it's an important piece, whether it's your spouse or yourself, it's an important piece to also begin to understand the underlying relational dynamics. That's what I do in my Save the Marriage system. I help you understand the underlying pieces to the relationship. So when people come and say, well, what about if there's an addiction? I don't cover how to recover from that as much as I address the relational piece that is still an element in an addicted relationship. And here's the important piece. A lot of times people say, well, I'll come back to you after we're in recovery. And my response is, you need to understand the dynamics as you're going into recovery, because part of the process for a couple to recover from an addiction is to understand we are dealing with and we are facing this. That's the piece that you get from my program. So if you are at the beginning stages or mid stage or even late stage of dealing with an addiction, it is time to take action on the relational piece. You can grab my Save the Marriage system by going to savethemarriage.com. That's savethemarriage.com, and begin working through to understand how you can deal with the relational elements as you're now addressing the addictive elements. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.